Okay.
As I understand, Krishna told Yudhishthira Maharaj to say the Aswatthamahata, and actually it was the horse which was killed. Elephant, right? And so he didn't want to say it. But Lord Krishna said, well, you can't be truthful. They are not truthful. Why should you be truthful? So he said it. And actually it was the elephant which was killed, not his son. So actually he said the lie.
No, Yudhishthira said, Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. And Krishna blew the conch shell when he said Hati. That's what happened. He disobeyed Krishna, that's the point.
Okay.
Shiva didn't disobey and Yudhishthira did.
So he didn't say the Aswatthamahata.
He said the elephant.
Oh, okay.
Like that.
Because Bhima killed an elephant called the
Aswatthama.
Mm-hmm. So okay.
Yeah, that's the point. So we see in the previous chapter, end of chapter 23, then Devahuti is lamenting because she did not take full advantage of the association of her husband, Kadama Muni. And then in the beginning of chapter 24, Kadama Muni is ready to renounce this world. But Devahuti, she begs him to please give a son. And then Kadama Muni instructs her to follow devotional principles and to purify her consciousness like that. So this is the secret to success in spiritual life, that one must follow to the best of one's ability with all sincerity the instruction of one's authority, the instruction of guru. And by following the instruction of the spiritual master, then one will attain perfection. And that's what we discussed last week, that perfection is attained when one follows perfectly the instruction of the spiritual master. So this is the way that Devahuti also became perfect. She followed perfectly the instruction of Kadama Muni. And then she was blessed with a child who was the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Kapila Muni. So we saw that when Kapila Muni appeared, then Lord Brahma and the other great sages, his sons, the nine great rishis, they all accompanied Brahma and came to Bindu Sarovara, and they had darshan of Kapiladev. So they're feeling very blissful upon having darshan of Kapiladev. And then Kadama Muni gives his, on the order of Lord Brahma, he gives his nine daughters in charity to the nine great sages. And then they depart in a very happy mood. And now tonight we see that Kadama Muni approaches Lord Kapiladev in a solitary place, and he begins to offer prayers to him. So tonight we'll go from verses 26 to 34, which are the prayers of Kadama Muni to Kapiladev. So these prayers are very deep and heartfelt prayers from Kadama Muni to his son, but his son is not an ordinary son. His son is the Param Satyam. It is the Supreme Absolute Truth himself. He is the Supreme Lord himself. So you'll see that he will offer prayers to him. And then tomorrow night we'll probably finish the chapter, and you'll see then he begs, the final verse we'll cover tonight, he begs to take sannyas, permission from Kapiladev to take sannyas. And then the next chapter, and then Kapiladev will begin to instruct Devahuti, and this will be the remainder of the third canto, and we'll see the philosophy of Sankhya Yoga being expounded upon by Kapiladev. So it's very
it's a very wonderful philosophical portion of the Bhagavatam, this section. Okay, so we'll begin with verse number
26.
When Kardamamuni understood that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the chief of all the demigods, Vishnu, had descended, Kardama approached him in a secluded place, offered obeisances, and spoke as follows. Gokula, can you read them?
Lord Vishnu is called Trayudya, three phases in Trayudya, Satya, Satya, and Svapa. But in Kali Devi he does not appear. From the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, however, we understand that he appeared God as a devotee in Kali Yuga. Lord Chaitanya is that devotee. Krishna appeared in the form of a devotee, but although he never disclosed himself, Rupa Goswami could understand his identity, for the Lord cannot hide himself from a pure devotee. Rupa Goswami detected him when he offered his first obeisances to Lord Chaitanya. He knew that Lord Chaitanya was Krishna himself, and therefore offered his obeisances with the following words. All of my respects to Krishna, who has now appeared as Lord Chaitanya. This is also concerned in the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj. In Kali Yuga, he does not appear. He does not directly appear, but he appears as a devotee. Vishnu, therefore, is known as Trayuga. Another explanation of Trayuga is that he has three pairs of divine attributes, namely power and affluence, piety and renown, and wisdom and dispassion. According to Sridhar Swami, his three pairs of opulences are complete riches and complete strength, complete fame and complete beauty, and complete wisdom and complete renunciation. There are different interpretations of Trayuga, but it is accepted by all learned scholars that Trayuga means Vishnu. When Kardamamuni understood that his son, Kapila, was Vishnu himself, he wanted to offer his obeisances. Therefore, when Kapila was alone, he offered his respects and expressed his mind as follows.
So what are the points here?
Well, can I ask, what means affluence, renown, and dispassion?
Whereabouts is it?
He has three pairs of divine attributes, namely power and affluence, piety and renown, and wisdom and dispassion.
So power means strength?
No, power and no affluence, renown and dispassion.
Affluence means wealth?
Wealth.
Yep. Piety means...
I don't know.
Renown means fame.
Okay. And dispassion?
Wisdom. Dispassion means renunciation.
Okay.
Yeah. Piety means beauty. Interesting, Prabhupada says piety, that actually means beauty. One of the Lord's opulences is Shriya, which means beauty. And it's piety. Because if one is not pious, then even if he's very beautiful or she is very beautiful, if they're not pious, then they will not be attractive. Like that. So piety, as we said, chastity is actually the beauty of the woman, not just the physical beauty. Like that. Any other points?
Since here the word, the Sri Yuga is mentioned, what is the Yuga Avatar of the age of Satya?
The Yuga Avatar?
Mm-hmm.
It's mentioned in Canto 11. Like that, all these are described in 11th Canto, and the Uddhava Gita then describes the different avatars for the different Yugas. I think from memory his name is Hamsa, because he is white.
Okay.
From memory, I think it's Hamsa. I could be wrong, but
I think there is no name, it's just said, it's Shukla Avatar.
I think there's name mentioned.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think if you look in the 11th canto, the name's mentioned also. So the Lord is known as Triyuga. Triyuga means he appears in three ages. And Sridhar Swami also says he has three groups of qualities, like that. But we know from the Bhagavatam that the Lord is known as Chana Avatar, which means that he is a hidden incarnation. In the age of Kali, he is hidden because he is Bhakta Avatar, which means he is in the mood of a devotee. So Mahaprabhu did not want his appearance to be well known because he was in the mood of a devotee. And devotees do not want attention. brought upon themselves. Devotees want the attention to go towards Krishna. So Mahaprabhu, being a perfect in the mood, Krishna in the mood of a perfect devotee, he did not want attention to come to himself. Although it actually became known, and when he was staying in Puri and so forth, hundreds and even thousands of people would come and they would wait outside his door, and they would also be saying, "Bhagavan, Bhagavan, come out, come out," like that. And then Subhas Thakur and some of the other devotees, they would say to Mahaprabhu, they would say, "See, they can all call you Bhagavan, but when we call you Bhagavan, then you become very angry with us. But there's hundreds of thousands of people and they're all calling you Bhagavan, but you do not become angry with them." So Mahaprabhu did not like it. He always hid his divinity to a great extent. Although in Mayapur, in some of the Navadvip Leela, then he would show his divine nature. He had the Mahaprakash Leela. And different times, he would have different pastimes where he'd show. Just like one time he came to Murari Gupta, and Murari Gupta was taking prasad, and he came in and he was dressed as like Krishna, dressed up like Krishna, and he came in. He stood at Murari's door, and Murari was taking prasad, and he said, "Murari." And Murari Gupta looked up and he said, "Just behold, here I am, Supreme Lord." And he's looking at him thinking, what's he going? This near my pundit, rascal boy, running around and always causing some mischief, and now coming saying he's Supreme Lord. But he was so attractive, so beautiful. He was like wondering like that. But Murari was kind of debating with him and not accepting. And Mahaprabhu was being very challenging to him, and he was trying to ignore him because he's thinking like a little boy, like, go away, like that. So he was looking there, he was taking his prasad, and Mahaprabhu passed water in his prasadam. Passed water in his prasadam, and he's like, he's just completely shocked. Who is this brat? Who is this amazing brat? He said, I am the Supreme Lord. He just walked out. So this is Mahaprabhu's pastime, but generally he does not like, especially after he took sannyas and he went into his mood of spreading the Sankirtan movement, and he deeply absorbed himself in the mood of Srimati Radharani, that at that point he especially did not like to be distracted like that. But the fact is, he is the Supreme Lord. There are many verses in many parts of the Vedas which support the fact that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the Yuga avatar for Kali Yuga. That's all. In the 11th canon of the Bhagavatam, in Prahlad Maharaj's teachings, it's in many places in the Vedas. There's many, many, many verses which explain that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though the Lord is known as Tri Yuga, only comes in three, but for us, we know that there's a fourth appearance in the fourth Yuga, in the Kali Yuga. It's not that there's no incarnation in Kali Yuga. Although in India they all think, there's many of them are claiming they are also.
What's that?
Kalki?
Yeah, it's Lila avatar.
Yeah.
Yuga avatar.
Not a Yuga avatar.
Okay.
It is Lila avatar.
So when they say it appears in three Yugas, that means only Yuga avatars.
Yeah. When we were staying in Vashana last year for the Japa retreat, we stayed at one ashrama, a massive ashram, very well organized, like that. But it is dedicated to and run by and controlled by one sadhu who claims to be the Yuga avatar. Like that. So the problem with him is he's becoming old. He's older now. I can't remember his name, but he's older now. And just cheating. At least when he was young, at least he had some small chance. But now he's old. Then how do you say you're a God? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then when he dies, then what does he say then? Yeah, it's just my lila. You know, but you're dead. Yeah, and you smell. Yeah. So this is all cheating like that. But Mahaprabhu is the actual incarnation.
What did Prahlad Maharaj indicate to you?
Prabhupada says, Prahlad Maharaj. Yeah. This is also confirmed in the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj.
So what did it exactly say?
We'll have to look at I think that's the Chana Avatar verse in the 7th Canto.
Chana.
Yeah, we'll have to look it up. There's one Back to Godhead magazine, and it's dedicated to Mayapur Dham. It came out quite a few years ago, and in the back they have many verses from the Shastra which explain that Mahaprabhu is from the Puranas, from the Vedas, from the Bhagavatam, from the Mahabharata, that explain that he is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
I received an email from the devotee. I received an email recently from the devotee saying like around 15 verses where it says Mahaprabhu appears.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's no doubt. There's many places in the Vedas. Lord Brahma says himself, there's many quotations like that. Kadama Muni said, "Oh, after a long time, the demigods of this universe have become pleased with the suffering souls who are in material entanglement because of their own misdeeds." Can you read?
This material world is a place for suffering. It is due to the misdeeds of the inhabitants, the conditioned souls themselves. The sufferings are not externally imposed upon them, rather the conditioned souls create their own suffering by their own acts. In the forest, fire takes place automatically. It is not that someone has to go there and set a fire. Because of friction among various trees, fire occurs automatically. When there is too much heat from the forest fire of this material world, the demigods, including Brahma himself, being harassed, approach the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and appeal to him to alleviate the condition. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends. In other words, when the demigods become distressed by the sufferings of the conditioned souls, they approach the Lord to remedy the suffering, and the Personality of Godhead descends. When the Lord descends, all the demigods become unlimited. Therefore, Kardamoni said, after many, many years of human suffering, all the demigods are now satisfied because Kapila Dev, the incarnation of Godhead, has appeared.
So what are the points?
There is a similarity between this and the Varaha incarnation. Even at that time, the situation was very similar. The demigods were very pleased when the Lord appeared in the boar form. Now again they are pleased when the Lord appeared in the stuff.
Good point. Anything else?
And there is a suffering of conditions, also either the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears personally or his representative. In this case, it's Kapila.
The demigods are really compassionate about conditioned souls. They always get distressed. Conditioned souls.
So, for what has Kapila Dev appeared? Like, you know, demigods are common and or is this a general statement Kadamamuni is saying about any incarnation?
Means?
For Kapila Dev's incarnation, you know, demigods are common and fair. You know, Vishnu, when you were satisfied with Kadamamuni, he said, I will come up here for you. It's not that the demigods are common and fair that come down as Kapila Dev to propagate the
Sankhya Yoga
because there's so much stress
or anything. They may not have asked for Kapila to come, but they've obviously petitioned the Lord that he makes an appearance. Just like you see in the beginning of the 10th canto in the Krishna book, then when Bhumi was distressed, then the demigods, including Brahma, they all approached Lord Vishnu, Shiradakshay Vishnu in Sweta Dweep, and they all prayed that the Lord would come. So something like that has happened. The demigods have made a prayer. They may not be asking for a particular incarnation, but they're praying that the Lord please come. At some point in time, yeah, it's happened. Because it's not that like they've just done that one time. It's like something they will do repeatedly. They go to the shore of the milk ocean and they chant the Purusha Shukta at that. So
there are many other avatars also where necessarily the demigods need not have prayed for the Lord. Like if you take Vaman avatar, no demigod prayed for Vaman avatar, but he was there to perform. He comes up his own accord.
That's there, but it may be that it may not be spoken of in the Lila, but we do understand the demigods will pray from time to time. It's not that they only did it just on the appearance of Krishna, but you know, millions of years are passing and many yugas are passing, so the demigods are going more than once.
I thought Aditi is too many austerities.
What's that?
Aditi, the mother, did too many austerities. For Vamandev to come.
Yeah.
So she wanted him back.
Yeah, there's many reasons. When the Lord comes, there's many reasons why he comes. To fit, satisfy different devotees.
He felt that we should be very good. That he comes to pray for the suffering of his mission. So I thought that he became more distressed by the fact that the earth planets
distress,
but they care for the conditioned souls as well, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking down on us at the moment and they're just thinking, you know, how unfortunate the whole situation is. And from their point of view, Mahaprabhu appeared not long ago.
So they would have been praying at that time before.
Yeah, when they say Kali Yuga come, then they understand and they're offering prayers.
Yeah.
That the Lord will come. And in their time, Mahaprabhu only came very recently.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
only like a few months ago or something.
Yeah.
Like that. So, yeah.
I understand that this incarnation took place in the Satya Yuga, which is considered to be the golden age, and people are in the mode of goodness. And it's mentioning about. And when the Lord is to appear, there has to be intense suffering, basically, you know, the masses, so that he can come and establish the principles of the religion. I really can't understand that they are really, you know, just suffering a lot, and that suffering is so intense that the Lord is compelled to come. Is there any other reason apart from that?
You mean why it seems contradictory?
Yeah.
That such yuga is there and then.
This is just the beginning of the creation.
Hmm.
And the personalities are quite sane, and the mode of goodness is basically just prevailing all over the earth, and it's very difficult to conceive of an intense suffering taking place at that point of time, compelling God to descend.
But there must be something in the universe, because at this point in time, the different planetary systems are there, different species are being created. You know, we've heard all these things have taken place, demoniac species are being created, so there is some need for the Lord to speak. Like that. So even though maybe such a yuga, but somewhere within the universe, the demigods have perception of all the planets. So there must be some feeling of. There's always distress, and this is Prabhupada's principal point within this purport. The material world is always a place of suffering. That is the nature of the material world. Dukkhalayam. Ashashvatam. Krishna says within the Bhagavad Gita, he certifies that the material world is a place of suffering. You cannot escape it. And why do we suffer?
Because of our own misdeeds.
Because of our own misdeeds. We caused all the suffering. We behaved improperly in the past, and therefore we are simply receiving our karma in this lifetime. It's very easily to accept that philosophically, but when you're going through the suffering, it is not so easy. I know myself, it's very easy to talk about it and to give classes and all the rest of it, but when the real test comes, we pray to Krishna, at least I do, and I'm not a pure devotee, so my prayers are not exalted, but I pray to Krishna, please do something about this suffering because it is too much. But the nature of the material world is that it is a place of suffering, but that suffering is punitive. Punitive means it is the Lord's mercy that he is ridding us of our attachment to the material world. Because if the material world was all shanti and peaceful, we would become very attached. there'd be no impetus to get out of the material world. But we do not belong in the material world. It's like either Burujan Prabhu was giving one example. He said there was one man he knew in Vrindavan who had a very large family. Very large family. And every time he saw him, he would say, "Well, how is the family?" And this devotee would say, because he had such a big family, you know, big extended family, he said, "In my family," because it's such a big family, he said, "always someone is very happy and someone is very distressed." At any given, all the time, at any given time, someone's going through some good karma and someone's going through some bad karma. You cannot escape it. And it's the same in our lives. Either we're going through something at this point in time, or someone we know is going through something. And one of my friends, he's been going through some suffering in recent times, through health problems and so forth. And then his wife was saying to me, you know, "Why is this happening? Why is he suffering? Why is this happening?" And I said to her, "That is the material world. You know, don't think that everything will be perfect. And don't pray to Krishna that Krishna..." Actually, I can't say it because that's what I do as well. You know, whenever the suffering is there, then that's what we do. We say to Krishna, you know, "Please stop the suffering." But the nature of the... At least we have to understand the material world is not going to be perfect. It is a place of suffering. That is the point. And if it was not a place of suffering, we'd never become detached. You know, because we are so attached. And the nature of the material world is you become detached, right, while you're going through suffering, but as soon as the suffering is finished, you just become attached again. You know, I mean, for devotees at least we get some realizations. For the non-devotees, I know my family members and so forth, they've been through some intense suffering, but then when the suffering passes for some period of time, then they just become as attached as they were before. You know, I know my brother, he left his body when I was 35. Yeah, I was only 15 at the time. So one of my brother, and then, you know, I remember my mother saying at the time, you know, "What's the point of all this? What's the point of getting involved in everything? What's the point of having enthusiasm for life? What's the point of, you know, enjoying? You know, what's the point?" Yeah, because it's all, you know, what at that point in time of suffering, it's pointless. And what's the point of enjoying? You can't enjoy it, so what's the point? But then after some time, then enjoying, you just become covered by Maya again, and all your attachments are there, and then you're just as attached as you were previously. That's the nature of the material world. But for a devotee, we should be getting realizations, and we should be becoming more detached from this material world. Gradually, the detachment should be coming. Because if we don't become detached, then at the time of our death, if we're still attached, then rebirth. So Krishna is trying to detach us. Okay. After many births, mature yogis, by complete trance and yoga, endeavor in secluded places to see the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada points out within the purport that unless one comes to the point of bhakti yoga or surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's yoga practice is not complete. So this is the only complete method of yoga. Is bhakti yoga. Otherwise it's not complete. Krishna confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita. That you can practice bahunam, jamanam, ante. You can go on practicing many, many lifetimes, many births of yoga. But unless you realize vasudev savam iti, unless you realize that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and he can only be attained by bhakti. And this Prabhupada quotes it in the purport. Bhakti-mama-vijanati yavanyas-chasmita-tota. That Krishna can only be understood by devotional service, bhakti. That is the culmination. Right? Everything else is subsidiary. And the other processes, as Prabhupada points out in the purport, they take many lifetimes to perfect. The yogis that we read about, Prabhupada says they take many lifetimes to perfect the practice. And Prabhupada said they have to practice in a secluded place. They have to go deep into the forest for many lifetimes and practice very difficult just to come to the point. And they don't reach perfection unless they realize that Krishna, Vasudev Savam Iti, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise it's imperfect. So Prabhupada says within the purport that the jnanis, they simply realize the sat portion of the Personality of Godhead, eternality. And the yogis, they realize sat-chit, because they realize paramatma. So they have knowledge and realization of eternity. But only devotees can realize Krishna properly. So therefore, they have realization of sat, chit, ananda, vigraha. Perfect eternality, knowledge, and bliss. All these things are perfectly understood. So this is only attained by devotional service. For the yogis, it is very difficult.
Is it the right understanding that the yogis, on his own endeavor, without bhakti, is able to understand sat-chit portion?
Say it again.
Yogis, on his own endeavor, yogic endeavor, after many, many births and even lifetimes of practice, he will still understand sat-chit portion. He cannot understand ananda portion unless and until there is basically a bhakti mixed with it. Is that the understanding? Or he cannot even realize the chit portion unless and until he has...
No, he realizes chit, but he doesn't realize that he doesn't have ananda. Ananda is only there when one takes to devotional service. As explained in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami, there are five rasas. So then he explains that Shanta Ras, neutrality, Rupa Goswami makes the comment that some acharyas argue whether this is even a rasa. Is this even a rasa? Because it is Shanta. Shanta means it is passive adoration. It is included in bhakti as one of the five rasas, but some say it's not a rasa because there's no service. So until you begin to do service, then you don't get ananda like that. You have to do something for Krishna.
It's not relationship.
But then,
not relationship established. You can do. You can establish a relationship only if you have some kind of exchanges. But if you don't do anything for anyone, it's no relationship. But just.
Yeah, it's good. That's a good point. So it is included as a rasa. Finally, they. Rupa Goswami includes as a rasa, but it's a passive adoration like that. And then he does give the example of the yogis, or those who practice Ashtanga Yoga. So the yogis are considered to be like in Shanta Ras. So unless they come in contact with a devotee, then when they, Prabhupada explains that when they see the Paramatma, they think, well, that is me, that is my identity. In personalism, and they try to merge with Paramatma, become one with Paramatma. They think that is them. So unless they come in contact with a devotee, then they do not get perfection in their yoga practice. Like that. Whereas in the next verse, we'll hear about the comparison or the contrast of devotional service.
Perfect in Santaras. I mean, it's just like. Some devotees, they want to be like flower, or some want to be like tree, or someone wants to be like grass, so that God can walk over them. Mm. So that's the service, isn't it?
Yeah. So Shanta, it is bhakti, they have devotion, but they can't render any service to Krishna.
But if the Lord walks over them, that's the service.
Yeah, but but there's no activity. Then Prabhupada calls it passive adoration. It is passive service. They allow Krishna to walk on them, but they can't actually do anything for Krishna.
But it's comfortable to his feet.
Yeah. But they're not doing anything. They're just if the Lord stands on them, then they get the benefit. Not that song. The cows are in. Yeah, you can say Dasya, and then they're mixed with Vatsalya. Because all the cows in Vrindavan, then they feel that Krishna is their son. In Vaikuntha, you have Dasya Ras. In Vrindavan, there is no pure Dasya. Everything in Vrindavan is either Madhurya, Sakya, or Vatsalya. Or some. Or if there is Dasya, then it is mixed with those, like that. It's like some of Krishna's friends are younger than him, so they perform service, dasya, but still it's a type of sakya. They still think Krishna is my friend. They don't think he is the supreme personality. Okay. Not considering the negligence of ordinary householders like us, that very same Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in our homes just to support His devotees. Yogeshwara Govinda Prabhu.
Devotees are so affectionate towards the Personality of Godhead that although He does not appear before those who practice yoga in a secret place, even after many, many births, He agrees to appear in a householder's home where devotees engage in devotional service without material yoga practice. In other words, devotional service to the Lord is so easy that even a householder can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead as one of the members of his household, as his son, as Kadavu Muni experienced. He was a householder, although a yogi, but he had the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapila Muni, as his son.
That's good. So what are the points here?
So when we understand that Lord Kapiladeva appeared in the house of Kadava Muni, we can appreciate the concept of the Lord appearing in the house of a householder. So when we come to the 10th canto, it's easy for us to appreciate that Lord Krishna appeared in the house of Nanda Maharaj.
Good. Any other points?
Another purpose also related, I don't know which one. Actually, I was Brahmana and was worshipping Nanda Maharaj. I don't want to know anything, I want to simply worship because he was the son of the Lord, so he became the father of the Lord.
I think it shows the humility of Kadavu Muni. He was so elevated, and as also his wife. But he is just telling Lord that I'm just a householder.
So the Bhagavatam emphasizes bhakti above all other processes. That's why it is considered to be the topmost shastra, the topmost scripture, because it emphasizes the potency of devotion. In the previous verse we heard that there is other types of transcendental processes for realization of God, but it is very difficult to realize God, as Krishna says in the beginning of the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that this path is very difficult and troublesome to follow, the impersonalistic type of meditation. Whereas bhakti yoga is so sublime, Prabhupada says in the purport, it is easy. It is not difficult like that. Prabhupada says, in other words, devotional service to the Lord is so easy that even a householder can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead as one of the members of his household, as his son. So this is the glory of doing deity worship. That's why it is said that the householders become purified by doing deity worship. That is one of the most important religious principles for the householders. They must worship the deity. At least everyone has a picture in their home. They may have the altar in their home, and you have the picture at least, but traditionally the deity would be there in the home. So you do the deity worship, and bhakti yoga is so powerful and so easy and so sublime, and it's just such a simple process. Now, you don't have to go to the forest for many births in seclusion to perform severe sense control and austerity and so forth to realize God. Simply install the deity within your home by the permission and the blessings of your guru, and he becomes like a family member. He's the head of the family. So therefore, within the home, then you just go about your normal daily routine. You have to cook to feed your family. So you cook, and because the Lord is there in the home, you offer the bhoga to the Lord. And he purifies it, right? And then you take the prasad and you become purified. And Prabhupada says in the songs of the Vaishnavacharyas, he said Mahaprabhu's process is that you just chant, dance and take prasad, and you will go back to Godhead at the end of this lifetime. That's how easy and perfect the process is. Such a simple process. It's not difficult. Right? And if we just make Krishna, and that's why it says within the purport, Krishna's instruction in the Gita is manmana bhava mabhakto. All you have to do is learn to think of Krishna. That is the rahasya of the entire Bhagavad Gita. Always think of me. Right? Such an easy such a natural process. You just go about your daily life's activities, but you make Krishna in the center, you make the deity in the center. You offer the bhoga to the deity. You chant Hare Krishna for the pleasure of the deity. You do all of your activities and you dedicate it to the deity. And that way you become fully Krishna conscious. Very easy, very naturally. You don't have to do anything that you don't normally do in your life. But you simply connect everything to Krishna. And just learn to think of Krishna. And you become fully purified, so much so that in this lifetime, you can go back to Goloka Vrindavan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in his bhajan, Shuddha Bhakata, he said that one day, while I was worshipping the deity in my home, I saw my home transform into Goloka Vrindavan. This is the process, very simple. And Prabhupada says in the purport that we see the deity as our son. The Lord is our son. So before we do the deity worship, just like every day when I do Guru Raj's puja, one of the instructions that we receive during the worship, when we first begin the puja, first we do Guru Puja. You worship Guru. Then you worship Param Guru. That's Srila Prabhupada, our Param Guru. Then you worship Parameshti Guru, which means the disciplic succession, the previous acharyas. And then you do Gauranga Puja. You know, worship Gauranga. And then you begin to approach Radha Krishna. Or in my worship, then I approach Giri Raj. Like that. Mahaprabhu gave Giri Raj Shila to Raghunath Das Goswami. And he says, if you worship this Shila, then you will see the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna in this Shila. So it is a very special kind of worship when you worship Giri Raj. It's esoteric. There's many levels to understand. We have to learn from our spiritual master how to do this worship. But when we first begin the worship of Giri Raj, after we've done Guru Puja, Param Guru Puja, Parameshti Guru Puja, Gauranga Puja, then we begin to worship Krishna or Giri Raj in my puja. Then the first thing we do, we take Giri Raj from the asana, from the altar, and it says that we smell his head. Just like you'll see that in the Krishna book, in the 10th canto, that when Nanda Maharaj would see Krishna, or when Vasudeva, his father, would see Krishna, they would take the child and smell the head. This is a sign of affection. You smell the head of the child, like that. So the first thing you do when you take the deity, when you take Guru Raj, then you smell his head. It says to do that. That's one of the instructions we have in the puja. So the mood is, he is like our son. So it's very, not that we just artificially come to the level of thinking the Lord is our son, But still, it's a feeling of intimacy. You know, it's a feeling of approaching the Lord with a feeling of intimacy. That He's a family member. That He is a friend. That He is the Son. But still, He is to be respected. He is the Supreme Absolute Truth. Until we can get so deeply absorbed in our rasa, or our eternal relationship with the Lord, that we just see Him as our friend, our son, or our lover, according to our rasa. But that is how to become Krishna conscious, by following this process and developing that. You know, gradually we're heading towards the 10th canto, to understand this thing, how to put the heater on low, maybe, so then how to satisfy everyone's body temperature. So this is the process. So the previous verse, it says, Kapila Muni says, the yogis try to realize you through so much difficulty, but us simple householders, you appear just through devotion, simple devotion, bhakti. You appear within our home and accept our worship. That is the power of devotional service. Far more powerful than any other process. Far more powerful. It just has to be executed without offense, that's all. Okay. Any points?
This Giriraj Shila, which is given to Raghunandas Goswami by Kedar Madhu, is it still there in Vrindavan?
Yeah, apparently. They say it's in Radha Gokulananda temple, but I've heard, because they say when you go there, they say this is the Shila, but I've heard that that's not the Shila. Apparently the Shila is, I think, from memory, it's close to the ISKCON temple. Just down, there's one place called the Oriental Institute for Studies or something like that.
Research
Center, yeah. I've heard that it's there. I could be wrong. I can't remember exactly. I think it was there. That's where they said it was. Like that. But yes, the Shila is still around. Like that. The Shila, which was given to Sanatana Goswami by Krishna himself. You know that Shila? The one in the Radha Dhammadai temple? Because every day, Sanatana Goswami used to circumambulate Giriraj through the entire parikram every day. And Krishna appeared to him when he was old and he said, don't go to so much trouble. Mm-hmm. And he gave him one Shila, and the Shila had Krishna's footprint in it, mm-hmm. and the flute and the footprint of the calf. And Krishna said, if you go around this Shila 7 times, it is equal to doing full Govardhan Puja. And that Shila is in Radha Damodar temple.
Is it 4 times?
Four times.
Yeah. They say 4 times. Yeah, people go around 4 times. But 4 or 7. It's all nice. Do at least 4. And if you're feeling very enthusiastic, do 7. At Radha Damodar Temple. You'll see that Shila. And if you go to Radha Gokulananda, they say this is the Shila of Raghunath Das. And most people accept that as the Shila. But I read, I think it was Mahanidhi Swami said that's not actually the Shila, it's actually at another place. But practically everyone says that is the Shila. Like that, but yeah, there's many wonderful Shilas. Okay. Kadama Muni said, You, my dear Lord, who are always increasing the honor of your devotees, have descended in my home just to fulfill your word and disseminate the process of real knowledge. Uddhava Bandha Prabhu, can you hear?
When the Lord appeared before Kadama Muni after his mature yoga practice, he promised that he would become Kadama's son. He descended as the son of Kadama Muni in order to fulfill that promise. Another purpose of his appearance is Chikursur Bhagavan Jnana, to distribute knowledge. Therefore, he is called Bhaktana Anavartana, he who increases the honor of his devotees. By distributing Sankhya, he would increase the honor of the devotees. Therefore, Sankhya philosophy is not dry mental speculation. Sankhya philosophy means devotional service. how could the honor of devotees be increased unless Sankhya were meant for devotional service? Devotees are not interested in speculative knowledge. Therefore, the Sankhya enunciated by Kapila Muni is meant to establish one firmly in devotional service. Real knowledge and real liberation is to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage in devotional service.
Mm. So, Prabhupada points out in the purport that just trying to find the Sankhya philosophy means devotional service. This is the point of this Sankhya philosophy. Now it's going to begin in the next chapter, chapter 25, and we'll see in chapter 29, I believe. Chapter 29 is called devotional service. This is what it is heading towards, an elaboration on devotional service. There's many interesting points in this section which is about to come up for the rest of this year. That there's a nice description of devotional service in the three modes of material nature. We'll go into this in detail when we get to it. Devotional service in the mode of ignorance, devotional service in the mode of passion, devotional service in the mode of goodness. These things are analysed very deeply, because Sankhya means analysis. It means, literally means to count or to analyse. Now the whole point of the Sankhya philosophy, and you'll see in chapter 24, chapter 25 when we begin, it becomes very analytical to begin with. But Prabhupada says, why is it so analytical? Why is it so philosophical? The reason is, as Prabhupada says, devotees are not interested in speculative knowledge. Therefore, the Sankhya enunciated by Kapila Muni is to establish one firmly in devotional service. By analysing the material world very analytically and very philosophically, it makes us very firm and fixed in our devotional service. That's why, in the beginning of the second chapter of the Gita, the first thing Krishna teaches is what?
The difference between matter and spirit.
Bodies. Difference between matter and spirit, which is called jnana.
Yeah.
Right? Verses 11 to 30 of the second chapter of the Gita. First thing Krishna does is establish you in jnana, because you have to understand the difference between matter and spirit. And this is what makes you firm or fixed in devotional service. If you're attached to the material energy, it's very difficult for you to become attached to Krishna. How can you become attached to Krishna? We know devotional service is the goal. We know that devotional service is what we're aiming for. We know that is the final message or the final instruction of Krishna: surrender to me fully. But if you're still attached to the material energy, how can you do it? So therefore, to make us firm, then Krishna gives us the Sankhya philosophy. Now the Gyan, which Krishna speaks in the Gita in the second chapter, in verses 11 to 30, the very beginning teaches, Dahino Smin and all these famous verses. The Gita is the Bhagavatam in seed form. The Bhagavatam is an elaboration upon the Gita. The 700 verses of the Gita are elaborated upon in the Bhagavatam in 18,000 verses. So whatever Krishna touches upon in seed form is expanded within the Bhagavatam. Now this Gyan, which is spoken of by Krishna in the second chapter of the Gita, verses 11 to that initial Gyan, it is now going to be expanded upon by Krishna in the form of Kapila. So this Sankhya, and this word Sankhya is actually mentioned in which verse is it? 39th verse of the second chapter. It actually mentions Sankhya and analysis like that. So this Sankhya, which is only very briefly mentioned by Krishna and very decisively mentioned by Krishna, is now about to be elaborated upon. And this Gyan will be spoken of in great detail. But the whole point of the Gyan is not just speculative knowledge in and of itself. It is to make us detached from the material energy, so, as Kapila will gradually describe to us, so we can fully surrender to Krishna. So therefore Prabhupada says Sankhya philosophy means devotional service. That is the point. Right? It's not a dry philosophy. Huh? The atheistic Kapila is dry because he analyzes everything, but then the end is atheism. That's dry. Right? This Kapila, the real Kapila Muni, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's going to analyze everything. Why? Because he wants you to surrender to him and taste the sweetness of devotional service. We don't want dryness, we want sweetness. We want nectar. We want Varuni juice. In the spiritual world, you can drink it every night. It actually says, you know, because Balaram, we see in his pastime, he drank Varuni and then he performed Rasa Lila. But it actually mentions that Srimati Radharani drinks it and she becomes intoxicated before Rasa Lila. And then she dances with Krishna and she's intoxicated and says her eyes roll. Normally we think Balaram is the other dude. But everyone in the spiritual world is enjoying. And so this is the goal. Krishna wants us to taste this nectar, this spiritual world.
And Prabhupada said that one first has to become conscious before he becomes Krishna conscious. And to become conscious, we need really to discriminate what's the matter and spirit. And the most difficult part to discriminate is within our mind, because a particular type of thinking is the matter. It's not us who are thinking. And we are switched on that, and it's just a chain of actions and reactions and material sentiments. Because in the Bhagavad Gita says also the feelings, hate, desire, this and that is just manifestation of the good gunas. So we really have to discriminate in our ways of thinking. We have to become conscious of what's matter and spirit in our way of thinking. It's easy to say this is the good, this is the matter, this is this, but we have to discriminate. So I think that's what helps us with Sankhya Yoga, you know, how to become conscious and then become conscious. Unless you're conscious and how we are really, you know, free of that bodily conception of life when you're just stopped by the material nature and you don't know what's happening, it's just not, you can't be Krishna conscious. You have to be really conscious to know what you're doing.
Yeah, it's a good point. Okay. Kadava Muni said, we already read that. My dear Lord, although you have no material form, you have your own innumerable forms. They truly are your transcendental forms, which are pleasing to your devotees. So this point has been made previously, that Krishna reciprocates with a devotee according to their desire or their taste. The rasa they want to experience with Krishna, and Krishna reciprocates. He reveals that form. So if you want to worship Lord Ram, he appears as Lord Ram. If you want to worship Lord Narayan, he appears as Narayan. If you want to worship the original personality of Krishna, he appears as Krishna. And if you want to worship Krishna in Vrindavan, then he appears as Krishna in Vrindavan. If you want to worship Mahaprabhu, he appears as Krishna. He appears as Mahaprabhu. My dear Lord, your lotus feet are the reservoir that always deserves to receive worshipful homage from all great sages eager to understand the absolute truth. You are full in opulence, renunciation, transcendental fame, knowledge, strength, and beauty. And therefore I surrender myself unto your lotus feet. So this is why we surrender to Krishna. Why do we surrender to Krishna? Because he is supreme. He is full of all opulence. Shanam Bhaga Itindana, which means, Itindana means unlimited. Samagrashya means unlimited. His opulence. That's why we surrender to Krishna. That's why we don't surrender to mundane personalities. That someone who says, I am the Yuga Avatar. You know, some person say, I am the Yuga Avatar, but yeah, where is the opulence?
Vrindavan fellows dream in this type of yoga. Nindya, one person is claiming that right now he is Kalki avatar. Chandrasekhar Prabhu had forwarded all of us one mail about him. He was an LIC agent and now he is claiming he is Kalki avatar currently. So many people are going to see him.
Yeah, so just write a letter to him and say, didn't you appear 10 years ago as well? I'll send you at least, you know, 5 times in the last 10 years. Is this the same one? Yeah, you're the same guy? Anyway. Not worth worrying about. Just like Prabhupada in the Melbourne Town Hall, and one man was arguing with him, standing up, and Prabhupada said, I kick on your face. What will you do? Is Prabhupada speaking in front of like 400 people. I kick on your face. What will you do? Yeah? You're saying you're a God? I kick on your face. What will you do? What sort of a God are you? Yeah, Prabhupada saying, I kick on your face. You know, someone says, this guy was standing up and saying, I'm God. Prabhupada said, sit down. Yeah? Just like in the Pandal program, across Maidan, in Bombay, or Delhi, like that, the ones in Delhi, one in Bombay, the Prabhupada did in the early 70s when he first came to India. And they had like 10,000 people, I think it might have been 30,000 people in one Pandal program. That's at least 10,000, I think it was about 30,000. And one man stood up and he started arguing with Prabhupada. You know, Indians, they do this. They stand up and just start, like in the middle of someone's giving an election, and some guy stands up and starts arguing. You know, what, you know, so the guy, he's arguing with Prabhupada in front of 30, and Prabhupada said, sit down. He just said, sit down. Prabhupada was angry, you know, like in the, and hundreds of people got up and left. I thought, how can he be sattu? And he's angry. How can he be sattu? He should be all shanti and peaceful. Prabhupada was angry. He said, sit down. Right? Sit down. And Prabhupada got very heavy with it. Not that. So we're not interested in any you know, bogus gurus and bogus avatars and like this. You know, we're interested in reality. Prabhupada was real. Prabhupada wasn't all sentimental and all like this. Just like this one, we went to Vashan and he had the big ashram and he had pictures all over the place of himself and he's standing like Mahaprabhu. So like I'm the yuga avatar, you know, just so sentimental. And there's even one picture where there's a deity of Krishna and he's kissing the deity on the cheek and he's looking straight at, his eyes looking straight into the camera. I mean, what's that sentimental nonsense? You know, just like, it's just sentimental, it's just nonsense. You know, what's, it's not even real. Like, Prabhupada was real. You know, like, it's some, yeah, and everyone gets all like, I don't know, how could you even follow some sort of person like that? You know, if you're going to surrender your life, you're going to surrender your heart. Yeah, you're gonna only give it to someone who's real, not someone who's like nonsense and sentimental. What's the interest? What to speak if someone says I'm God? You know. Okay. I surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, descended in the form of Kapila, who is independently powerful and transcendental, and who is the Supreme Person and the Lord of the sum total of matter and the element of time, who is the fully cognizant maintainer of all the universes under the three modes of material nature, and who absorbs the material manifestations after their dissolution. So this is Bhagavan, this is the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Param Satyam. It is not even a great saintly person. It is God himself who is about to speak.
Sanskrit is very nice. Param Pradhanam.
So this verse, Kardama Muni, is establishing, because Kardama Muni, how powerful is Kardama Muni? We saw what he did in the previous chapters. Right? He created this aerial mansion and then got into the mansion that flew all around the universe and said in the mansion, it said everything was like new and fresh and continuously causing wonder and amazement. And Kardama Muni himself was amazed by the mansion. And then he took on 9 forms, his original form, and 8 other yogic forms to satisfy Devahuti. You know, such a powerful personality. But he says, you know, this is actually the supreme entity. This is God. God is not sentimental. God is all powerful. And that's what is being described here. Someone who is who controls time. Try to control time. Try to control it. Stop time right now and make it go backwards. Right? Stop time now and go back 50 years. Stop time. You know, you can't control that. It's too. You know, time, we don't even know what time. You can't even touch it. But we're all controlled by it. Right? And who controls this? This is the person who's sitting in front of Kardama Muni. Right? Supreme Absolute Personality. It's so powerful. Right? So we should not be sentimental in our. God is not a sentimental cheap thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The personality of Godhead, Kapila said. I jumped a verse, huh?
34.
Yeah, okay. So we finished with 34. Today, I have something to ask from you, who are the Lord of all living entities. Since I have now been liberated by you from my debts to my father, and since all my desires are fulfilled, I wish to accept the order of an itinerant mendicant. Renouncing this family life, I wish to wander about free from lamentation, thinking always of you within my heart. So Prabhupada explains within the purport that there are two. First of all, he says that sannyas necessitates complete absorption in Krishna consciousness. That is the purpose of sannyas. Sannyas means you are completely absorbed in Krishna. Huh? Not absorbed in anything else. Only absorbed in Krishna. Therefore, the Vaishnava sannyasis, they take Tridanda sannyas. Tridanda sannyas means the mind, the body, and the words in Krishna's service. Sannyas, Vaishnava sannyas, Tridandi sannyas, means the mind, the body, and the words absorbed in Krishna. Right? That is the purpose of sannyas. So whether you become a sannyas formally, or at the end of life, every devotee must take sannyas in consciousness, which means mind, body and words must be fully absorbed and dedicated to Krishna. That is the goal of Krishna consciousness. That is the purpose of sannyas. All of us have to reach that state of consciousness. Now Prabhupada says there are two types of sannyasis. There is the Goshchanandi and the Bhajananandi. Atmanandi, yeah. One who is the preacher and the other one who is self-satisfied. So the one who is self-satisfied, that is, Kardama Muni is asking the Lord to become like that. Just let me take sannyas. Let me just go away and just fully absorb myself, thinking of you in my heart always. But Prabhupada, his mood and the mood of Bhaktisananda Saraswati Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and many of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas is Goshchanandi, which means preach. And you see continuously Jayapataka Swami, Devamrita Swami, Prabhu Vishnu Swami reminds us so many of the powerful Gaudiya Vaishnavas, sannyasis, Goshchanandi, dedicated, Indrajumna Swami, dedicated to preaching, just continuously moving about preaching. So that is their sannyas vow. Right, to fully dedicate mind, body and words in the service of Krishna and to preach and spread Krishna consciousness as far and wide as possible. As Srila Prabhupada says at the end of the purport that the sannyasi should not stay in any one place for more than 3 days because he does not want to become attached. But we see the main principle is that they dedicate the mind, body and words to serving Krishna. Just like you see Radhana Swami, now he spends months and months at a time in Mumbai or at Pune, at different places. So someone can say, well, he's not moving around every 3 days, but he's even transcendental to these instructions because the main principle is that the body, the mind and the words are fully dedicated to the service of Krishna. So even though, because they're even beyond their own attachment, sannyasi must keep moving so they not become attached. But they're so absorbed in Krishna, they're not even attached. Just fully absorbed in preaching, Gosha Nandi. The two types of sannyasis are there. So in our movement, we're encouraged by Prabhupada's example to be Gosha Nandi. Just like if you're reading the Prabhupada Lilamrita, then Prabhupada says, when you get old, you can retire in Vrindavan. And then tomorrow Krishnamurti says to Prabhupada, but Prabhupada, you are not retiring. And Prabhupada said, I am not so advanced. So therefore I will preach. And tomorrow Krishnamurti says, then we will also follow your example. That was Prabhupada's mood, like that, to preach. So tomorrow night we'll probably finish the chapter. And tomorrow night we'll discuss a very interesting point, that Kadava Muni had the Supreme Lord himself, he had his association within his home. So then why does he want to take sannyas? Why would you leave? If the Lord just appeared within your home and you've got perfection, then why leave? So tomorrow night we'll discuss this in greater detail. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.